Not always politically correct, but always correct. Using only primary source stories of those who were actually there, you're listening to Threads of Liberty. Welcome back. Today's topic is about Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce. Now, I grew up in Northern California, and I was taught that it was Nez Perce, but I've been informed that's incorrect pronunciation.
That's California education for you.
There you go.
Some things haven't changed.
Apparently, it is the Nez Perce, so I will try to remember that all the way through this podcast. Young, old habits die hard. Welcome back to us today. We wanted to cover some history about Chief Joseph because we see some parallels between what is happening today and what happened to them back in the day. Now, not all Indian tribes are the same here, so we want to make sure we have that cleared up first. First of all, there were some very savage tribes who did horrible things to settlers as they were coming across the plains. There was the Comanche and the Apache. There were also very learned tribes, like the Cherokee, who had their own alphabet. And then there were very peaceful tribes, like the Nez Perce. And Chief Joseph followed his father as chief. They were both called Chief Joseph. And this is a story today about what happened to him and his tribe.
So as you listen to this podcast today, learn from the story of Chief Joseph. It's fascinating what happened. It's sad, but it's
very
fascinating.
Sad.
But the main point that I would make today is that we learn from history. And what happened to the Nez Perce because of the overreach of the American government is exactly what is happening to us today. Government overreach, too much power in the hands of a few will be abused. So as you're listening to the history, don't forget the lesson that we learned from Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce Indian.
That's right. Government never has enough power. It always is up to the people to restrain that power.
Well, we've talked about this before, that when does government think it has enough power?
Never.
It never does.
No.
The classic example we've always used before has been the story of the Jews and the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
They would have exterminated them totally if it hadn't been for the Americans and the British that came in. But this also is a classic example of government overreach. If it were not for certain things that happened, the government would have totally annihilated some of these Native American tribes.
So give us a little bit of background here as to the settlers that were coming into the Northwest, because this is where the Nez Perce lived. They lived in the Northwest. And why Indian lands were being taken away from them.
Well, first thing to remember is that the Nez Perce were, as you mentioned, a very peaceful tribe. There were two Josephs. We'll call him Joseph the Older and Joseph the Younger. One was the father. Joseph the Older was there when Lewis and Clark came through. That tribe was the tribe that supplied them with horses and with food and gave them direction to go on to the Pacific coast.
And they thought very highly of Lewis
and
Clark.
Very, very highly of them. It was one of the problems. They came to trust almost too much.
And that's also the story of
Sacagawea. The story of the Nez Perce begins with Native Americans in general. There were over 600 treaties signed by the American government with Native American tribes. None of those treaties was ever kept. Some of the treaties were broken the very day that they were signed. And these were not verbal treaties. These are in writing. So if you want to look them up on the internet, you can find them there. But 1832 is when we have the very first major, major treaty. And that was called the Indian Removal Act under Andrew Jackson. And under that treaty, the Native Americans were to possess all lands west of the Mississippi. Now, it didn't affect all the tribes because some tribes were already west of the Mississippi. The idea was that the European settlers were east of the Mississippi, Native Americans were west of the Mississippi. Chief Joseph, the Older, had approximately 13 and a half million acres as his tribes. It wasn't even a reservation. That's the area that they possessed. The government came in 1855 and said, this is Joseph the Older, you don't need all that land, that 13 and a half million acres. We think you only need about half that, 7.5 million acres.
And that was very confusing to the Nez Perce because it was like, what do you mean we don't own that? We've lived on this land for centuries.
Yeah. And I think we tend to confuse that sometimes. We tend to think that it was just land to them. They viewed this as their country. It wasn't just a piece of land. It wasn't a field that they owned. This was their country. Matter of fact, it was so confusing that Speckled Snake, one of the major Native American chiefs, said this. After all of this had happened to them, they'd lost their land. He said, I am now an obscure member of a nation that formerly honored and respected my opinions. The path to glory is rough, and many gloomy hours obscure it. Now listen to this. He said, may the Great Spirit shed light on you, and that you may never experience the humility that the power of the American government has reduced me to is the wish of him who in his native forest was once as proud and bold as yourself. He talks about what the power of the American government could do if it overreached. And that is the story of the Nez Perce. As I mentioned, 13 and a half million acres they possessed to begin with. Government came in a number of years later and said, you don't need all that, you need 7.5 million. Chief Joseph Sr., being a peaceful man, as we learned from Lewis and Clark, said, okay, we'll do that. We don't need all of this. So he accepted that, and it was reduced down to 7.5 million acres. Time went by, and as usual, the American government, with the westward movement, we call it westward expansion,
right,
of the European settlers. And let's not condemn the American settlers there. These people were moving westward and they were doing magnificent things. These were brave and courageous people. But the fact is that they were moving into lands that the Native Americans had been on for hundreds, if not thousands of years. So it was confusing to the Native American. At the same time, you have to respect what the European settlers were doing. So it's a tough situation here. But basically in 1860, 7.5 million acres, 1865, the American government came in and said, you know what, Joseph, you don't not only need the 13.5 million, you don't need the 7.5 million. What we're going to give you now is 750,000 acres.
Well, that is really reduced.
It was 1/20th of what he had originally. Now, this was with Chief Joseph the Younger. You would think he would fight back. You would think he would have said, no, this is our land. We've been on here forever. We're not giving it up. But foremost in Chief Joseph the Younger's mind was the preservation of his people. He recognized the power of the American government. He saw the movement of the settlers coming in and how massive they were. So rather than fight the American government, he said, okay, we'll take that 750,000 acres and we'll live on it. So they did.
Well, in this particular area was rich in trees, rich in wildlife, buffalo, I mean, fish.
There was a reason why they chose this area to live in. If you ever go to the Wallowa Valley in Oregon, it is just as you said, it is beautiful. Rivers to fish in, lands to hunt on, trees. It was some of the most beautiful country that you've ever seen.
Well, in fact, you went to Boy Scout camp there.
I did. Years ago, back in another millennia, that was where I went to Boy Scout camp. I didn't realize where I was at the time, but it is gorgeous. The government finally came to Chief Joseph a few years later. They said, you know what, Joseph, that 750,000 acres that we gave you, we need that land now because there's been a gold rush in the Northwest. And what was happening is all of the gold rush pioneers, I guess you would say, those that had come west to go to California to look for gold, those that had not made it and were still looking for gold, rushed to the Northwest. And as they rushed to the Northwest, guess whose land they needed?
The Indians.
They needed the Nez Perce Indian. So the government came to them in the 1860s and said, Joseph, we're not going to just reduce your land. We're going to move you now to a reservation in Northwest Idaho. Now, it's pretty there, but it's nowhere near as beautiful. The fishing is different. The hunting is different. The climate is different. Everything was different. At that point, Joseph said, no, we're not going to accept that. That, however, left him with a tough decision to make. You either fight the American government or you go somewhere else.
Right.
Joseph chose to go somewhere else. Across the border, up through Idaho, up through Montana, on the Montana-Canadian border was Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull had gone to Canada years before and set up a safe place there. He had a place for the Nez Perce to come and to live. So that's what Chief Joseph decided to do.
So they decided to walk all the way there? Well, I guess they had some horses.
They had some horses, but he chose about 800 of his band, the Nez Perce band, because within every tribe there are bands, about 800 of his band to travel northward. It ended up being a four-month journey, most of it on foot, with 800 of his tribe. 600 were women and children. 200 were chiefs. But they decided to make that journey along with them because this was their wealth, were 2,000 horses. So try to picture this. They're coming through heavily populated, dense forest. They're crossing rivers. They're crossing mountains with 800 people with 2,000 horses. And you also have the American government military after you. Joseph thought that if he went to Canada, the government would say, good, we're rid of you.
Well, you would think.
Yeah, you would. But there is one of the classic examples of overreach. It was all about power for the government. They weren't going to let him go. They weren't going to let him go where he wanted to go, even if it was outside of the United States. So they pursued Joseph. In the first week of his journey northward into Canada, he was surprised. He thought, like I said, they were going to let him go. But the military came in on him in the middle of the night, and they separated the 200 warriors from the 600 of the women and children. And it was devastating. And there are stories of Joseph as he dashed through.
He dashed through the troops trying to get to his wife and children. And he finally made it unarmed, although bruised and battered. And his wife handed him his gun and said, go fight.
Now, you've got to hand it to a woman that does that. You know, your husband dashes through it. He's being fired at. They're hitting his horse.
Right.
You know, they're firing at him. He's not armed. First thing he does when he makes it to his teepee, his tent, is his wife hands his gun. She's standing there ready for him. And it's not a pat on the back and I love you, honey. It's go fight.
Go fight.
So he absolutely did. And they made their way northward. Along the way on this.
So somehow they escaped from the cavalry.
They escaped. Five different commanders were sent after Chief Joseph.
Wow.
2,200 cavalry against 200 of Joseph's warriors.
Hmm.
This whole journey they were pursued. Five different armies failed to capture him or stop him along the way. But along the way, it was a difficult route.
It was very difficult. His sister-in-law has a quote that is just kind of heartbreaking because they had to keep a certain pace in order to escape. And that meant some of the elderly and the disabled were unable to keep up.
This is one of the ultimate examples of selflessness.
It is.
Of people that, because they didn't want to slow their tribe down, volunteered to stay behind.
They did.
Staying behind meant death, however.
It did. They were given a small amount of food to last until whenever, and they sang the death chant song, and then the tribe would move on, which is just a heartbreaking thing to think about. Here are the words of Chief Joseph's sister-in-law. It was lonesome, the leaving. Husband dead, friends buried or held prisoners. I felt that I was leaving all that I had, but I did not cry. You know how you feel when you lose kindred and friends through sickness, death? You do not care if you die. With us, it was worse. Strong men, well women, and little children killed and buried. They had not done wrong to be so killed. We had only asked to be left in our own homes, the homes of our ancestors. Our going was with heavy hearts, broken spirits. But we would be free. All lost, we walked silently on into the wintry night.
Try to picture what the Nez Perce were going through. They were on this four-month journey of 1,500 miles, traveling in unknown territory to them. They couldn't fish along the rivers because that's where the cavalry expected them to be. They couldn't hunt because the cavalry would hear the sounds of their rifles. They were going over desert. They were going over mountains. There were not stores along the way to stop. There was nobody to help them.
There were no trails.
Nothing. And there were no tribes along the way that were willing to help them. The other tribes were afraid of the American government also. Joseph's only goal was to make it to the Canadian border. But in the fashion of government overreach, the American government was not willing to let him go. As mentioned, five different armies came against Joseph. Five different armies lost to him. And he made it to the Canadian border.
Almost.
Almost. Which is probably the saddest part of this story. He was within 40 miles of the Canadian border when General Miles, one of the commanders that was after him, surrounded him. All they had to do was let him travel a day and a half. But they wouldn't do it. They finally decided that they would listen to Joseph. And they decided to negotiate with him. Joseph went, and for consecutive days, he negotiated with General Miles. He wasn't asking to go back to the Wallowa Valley, his original reservation. He wasn't asking for 13.5 million, 7.5 million, 750,000 acres. He wasn't asking for any of that. He wasn't even asking to go back to the area. Just let them go back to the reservation in northwestern Idaho where they'd never been before. That's all he wanted. He wanted his people to live. Matter of fact, we hear in his words as he negotiated with General Miles that All he wanted was to have the same laws that the white man had applied to him.
He does. This is what he said. If the white man wants to live in peace with the Indians, he can live in peace. There need be no trouble. Treat all men alike. Give them all the same law. Give them all an even chance to live and grow. You might as well expect the rivers to run backwards as that any man who is born free should be contented, penned up, and denied liberty to go where he pleases.
So that was his request. Pretty simple, but they wouldn't give it to him. Finally, they negotiated, and General Miles said to Joseph, okay, and I'm not even going to make the comparative with today, because this is, it happens, but they said, okay, we'll give you your land back. You can go back to the Wallowa Valley. You can go back to your homeland. Joseph was ecstatic. It was more than he'd asked for. He went back to his tribe. They celebrated that night. The next day, the soldiers came in, arrested them all, put them on cattle cars, and transported them to Leavenworth, Kansas.
It had all been a lie.
It had been a lie, 100% lie. They kept them there for several years. The Nez Perce died in droves. They couldn't hunt. They couldn't fish. Even the things that they had grown, they could no longer grow. It was a totally different climate.
They couldn't take care of themselves, but the American government was busy promising them that they would take care of them, and yet they were starving. They had no blankets. It was a desperate situation.
Here's the other comparative. When you become too dependent upon government, then you're going to suffer the consequences. The government had promised them blankets. They had promised them food. They had promised them everything they asked for, but they gave them nothing. Finally, the government decided that they were going to let Joseph's tribe go back to this new reservation that was in northwest Idaho, but not Joseph. They kept him there in Leavenworth for a number of years. Finally, they let him go back to a reservation that is just north of Spokane, Washington. It's pretty, but it was not the Wallowa Valley. And it was there in 1904 that probably, oh, undoubtedly, one of the most peaceful and noble Native Americans is buried.
You know, Chief Joseph gave a speech that's extremely famous if you know any American Indian history. I am tired of fighting. Our chiefs are killed. Looking Glass is dead. It is the young men who say yes or no. He who led the young man is dead. It is cold and we have no blankets. The little children are freezing to death. My people, some of them have run away to the hills and have no blankets, no food. No one knows where they are, perhaps freezing to death. I want to have time to look for my children and see how many I can find. Sorry, this makes me emotional. Maybe I shall find them among the dead. Hear me, my chiefs. I am tired. My heart is sick and sad. And from where the sun now stands, I will fight no more forever.
He was undoubtedly among the most noble, not only of Native Americans, but of any man that has lived in America. I wish this story ended here. Now, that may sound odd because it's a sad story, but it gets worse. Shortly after the death of Joseph, the American government started schools for Native American children. They brought in over 100,000 Native American children, forcibly took them off the reservation, and took them to schools like the one in Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Which is infamous.
It is infamous because the head of that Native American school had a saying. And upon this saying, he based everything that they did at that school. And the saying was, kill the Indian, save the white man. So in other words, kill everything that is Native American about them, and you will save them, because now they will be just like us. It was saying basically, people that are different cannot live together. So what they did is they brought these children in and they stripped them of every ounce of their culture and of their being that they had. When you came in, they took away any tokens of the Native Americans that they may have had. They made them change from their Native American clothing into the white man's clothing. They took them, if you've ever seen the movie Out of the West, they literally did this. They would take them into a room, and in this room would be a chalkboard with all of these anglicized names. They wouldn't even let these Native American children keep their own Native American Indian names. You had to pick a new name. You would pick a name like George or Fred or Alice. You couldn't mention any of your Native American leaders. You could not mention anything about your Native American religion. And worst of all, they made the young men cut their hair. And there is story after story after story about how this cutting of the hair was the most painful thing that any of these Native American boys went through. Their hair was a connection to spirituality. It was a connection to their tribe. It was an outward demonstration of their growth and who they were. The American government would not stop in their attempt to strip the Native American of their self, of their identity. And again, forgive me if I belabor the point, but we need to look at this government overreach and look at what's happening to us today. Too much power in the hands of anybody is not good. We seem to have forgotten that the American Constitution was not meant to restrict the American people. It was meant to restrict the American government from having too much power. It has been forgotten and forgotten and forgotten and forgotten through history. We have a saying that we are very well acquainted with, and it is by Thomas Jefferson. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free, it expects what never was and never will be. What he meant was this, and we need to remember it. If we forget who we are and who we were, where we came from, the sacrifices that were made, we will never be free. Because we will not know the importance of those principles. We will not understand the sacrifices that were made. There is an attempt today to basically take large segments of our history away from us because they're painful or they conflict with somebody's ideas. We have to leave those things in history, like the story of the Native American, and learn from it. Look at what the government did to them, not to condemn government as a whole, but understand there are times when the government in all its power overreaches. They did it with the Nez Perce.
And isn't that the point of studying history, is so that we don't repeat it, because we will have learned from it, both the good and the bad. We were recently on the Bannock Shoshone Reservation, and we were speaking to one of the women there. We asked her about their language and who in the tribe is still able to speak the language. She said most people over the age of 60 still have some remnant of the language and are able to speak some of it at least. She said the younger ones, it had been totally lost because they've been to public schools. She said there was a movement on that reservation. A charter school had come in that was teaching the elementary age, and that they had included the Bannock and Shoshone language in the charter school. At least there was a recognition that we have taken something away and we need to give it back.
A recognition of something that was lost. They were trying to regain before it was too late. She told us that there were over 300 Native American dialects, that today 200 of them are still partially spoken. But by the year 2050, best estimates are that of the 300 dialects, only 20 of them will be spoken or remembered. Government is good. We need it in this country. But we also need to recognize that government overreach can be dangerous. We need to learn from history, because if we expect to be ignorant and free of our history, it will not happen.
We hope you'll join us again for our next story of Threads of Liberty.